As I said to you at the beginning of the celebration of the Eucharist, this Sunday, throughout the United States, the bishops of the United States, because of the proximity to July the 4th, and also because every couple of years we are in a political season of campaigning, the bishops of the United States want us to review and to be conscious of our obligation to participate in the political process as Catholics, as Christians. Now, I find this, I think many of you have already heard me talk about this, but it's never bad to review it, especially when we're close to the political season. But there's quite a few people that still think of the issue of a priest at Mass speaking about being involved in the political process as a Catholic Christian. They think there's something wrong because we are so ingrained with the understanding that our Constitution guarantees a separation of church and state. And indeed, it does. And the Catholic Church very much affirms that separation. The problem, however, is that a lot of us misunderstand the separation of church and state and presume that it means the separation of all religion from public life. Now, notice there is a big difference between a separation of church and state and the separation of religion from public life. Now, just let me give you just a little quick history of what it is that that separation of church and state in the Constitution refers to, because the founding fathers put it in there for a reason. They had a particularly distasteful experience that they wanted to make sure did not occur in the United States. That distasteful experience, of course, was the experience that began for them in England as the one aspect of the Reformation in the 16th century. King Henry VIII was faced with the fact that he had no male heirs, and he kept on marrying different women, and he killed some of them and wanted to divorce some of the others. But at one point, he asked the Pope to give him an annulment so that he could marry again another person. And the Pope denied it. The Pope was well aware of what Jesus said, that if there is no anomaly, that what God has joined together, no man may divide. Well, Henry was so angry that he declared that he was going to be, from that point on, he was going to be the head of the Church of England. And he said, anyone who does not worship in the Church of England faces either prison or death. If you were a Catholic priest in the 16th and 17th century in England, especially if you were a Catholic priest, you would be tortured and killed. So all the priests of England of that time had to say Mass in secret. Why? Because King Henry and his successors had made the Church of England, the Anglican Church, the state church. They had established that would be the state church. And everyone in England was to belong to the state church. Bishops and all government officials had to take an oath saying that they took Henry VIII as the head of the Church of England. And if you did not take the oath, you would be killed. As a matter of fact, there is one of the great saints of the Catholic Church is a man by the name of Sir Thomas More. And Sir Thomas More was the chancellor, or pretty close to the Secretary of State under King Henry VIII. And Thomas More was a very religious man, and he refused to take that oath. And so much was his silence loud that King Henry finally put him on trial and ultimately chopped off his head. And so when people who wanted to practice Christianity in any different way in England, some wanted to be Catholic and some wanted to even purify the Church of England even more from all of the Catholic things that remained. And they would not be allowed. And of course, we know those people as Puritans. And the Puritans were people who were trying to purify the Church of England and get rid of every trace of the Catholic tradition. And since they were not allowed to practice, they took the boat and they landed on Plymouth Rock. And that is the foundation of the English colonies in the United States. But when the founders of our Constitution, of our nation, became aware, they were writing that down, they were aware of the experience of England. And they did not want another government to say, this is going to be the official state church of the United States. And when they say, when they put in the amendment, Congress shall make no law regarding the establishment of religion, that's what they meant. That no church was going to be the official church of the United States. That there would be religious freedom. Now, the problem, of course, is that when people hear separation of church and state, since a lot of times we don't know the historical context, what we end up hearing is that religion or church is supposed to have nothing to do with public society, with public policy. It's supposed to be totally separate. And that's a bit too much of a stretch. The Catholic Church, as I told you, affirms the separation of church and state. Like, let me give you an example. If I chose one day to run for mayor of Houston, okay, I could try, but the Vatican would stop me in my tracks. I would be told, you either leave the priesthood or stop running for public office. Why? Because I am an official, not elected, but ordained official of the Catholic Church. And there is a separation of church and state. Now, that doesn't mean that the church should have nothing to do with public society. From the very beginning, we have understood that part of our responsibility is to participate in the public process of how we should live together. Aristotle, the great Greek philosopher, said something that I've enjoyed very much, the definition of politics. It's a very simple one. Politics, according to Aristotle, is the answer to one question. How ought we to live together? We can't live separate. We all live and we're interconnected. We drive the same roads. We follow the same laws. We live in a structured society. Who makes the decisions as to what the rules are that will structure that society? How do you come to those rules? And that is the process of democratic government. What the Catholic Church says is we as Catholic Christians, as well as every other citizen, no matter what religion you are, we have a duty to participate in the public process, not leaving our beliefs at the door of the church, but that our beliefs about who God is and who humanity is and what our values are, those are brought into our opinions in the way that society ought to be organized. That's the norm. Every other religion does the same thing. If you're a Hindu, you bring your Hindu understanding to the organization. If you're an atheist, you bring your atheist understanding, because atheism is a religion. If an atheist uses the word believe, I don't believe, but he has no proof that there is no God. And so everybody brings their religious understandings to the table. And that's where we compromise and we vote and we do that. But it's our responsibility as Christians to make sure that we participate as Christians. There's a big difference between freedom of worship and freedom of religion. A lot of times we get those two mixed up. Freedom of worship, if you ever hear that on the news or anything, what it means is that you are free to do whatever you wish inside your church, but don't bring it outside. That's freedom of worship. Freedom of religion is when you get to be a disciple of whoever you want to be, Buddha, Muhammad, whoever you want to be. And those teachings form your entire life. It's not a matter of leaving your beliefs at the door of the church. And you have to understand, that is the norm, even in American history. When you open, and this is one of my favorite things to think about, when you open the Declaration of Independence, the most important document, the most important sentences there say this: we hold these truths to be self-evident. What is a synonym for self-evident? Basically, they're saying we have faith in these things. We have no intention of proving these things. We have faith in them. What are they? That all people are created equal. Where did they get that? If you look at all of the other religions in the world, if you look at Buddhism, if you Hinduism, if you look at Islam, if you look at Taoism, look at all the different religions in the world, even atheism. No one says that all men are created equal. No one. In India, they have the caste system. You're born into different castes. Okay? In Islam, Muslims have many more rights. A Christian is not equal in any way to a Muslim. Okay? Yeah, so the whole notion that all men are created equal is a Christian-Jewish understanding of reality. And it is an understanding of reality that is based on the revelation of God to Moses and through Jesus. We can tell, even an atheist can tell, that we're not created equal. If you look at the measure, look, some people are bald. Some people have hair. Some people are much more intelligent. Some people are a little less intelligent. Some people are loud. Some people are not. Some people are sickly. Some people are not. Some people are rich. Some people are poor. If the last thing you can say, if you look at different people in humanity, you can say, oh yeah, they're all equal. When you're saying that, you are actually saying there is something about being human that we cannot see, because all we can see is differences. But there's something about being human that makes us all equal. And that equalness of human dignity is endowed by our Creator. All men are created by a Creator equal. And that is comes from faith. And what are these inalienable rights? And that God gave us those inalienable rights. Notice, the rights that we have do not come from the state. It is God who gives them to us. And what are they? Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Those are given to us by God. So notice, from the very beginning, the founders of our nation did so on a religious basis. They actually founded our country on faith statements that they got from the Bible. That's how they founded our country. And if you continue to look at the history of the United States, you always see religion being woven into decision making. Who were the abolitionists of the time of the Civil War? Where did the abolitionists start against slavery? It started in the churches. It started because Christians began saying it is immoral for one human being to own another because we are all equal. That came from the churches. And you just move forward. Even when they did stuff in the modern era. Okay, what was Martin Luther King? He was a preacher. He certainly didn't think that, I shouldn't say anything about what society is all about. Of course he should. And you can go on and on in the different things that have happened. And that's the distinction between, yes, there is a separation of church and state, but not of religion from public life. And so you and I have a responsibility to let our priorities as Catholic Christians influence us in the way we vote. The Catholic Church will never tell you how to vote. We will not tell you how to vote. We will tell you the different principles that are important in making your decision about who should lead our country. Okay? And that you will always see. So, for us, the whole notion of religious liberty means that we are allowed to be who we are and allowed to participate in the political process as Catholic Christians. And we have that right. Because I tell you, periodically, when I go to the radio, we'll get calls, because we were constantly talking about issues in politics between the rabbi and myself and the Baptist minister. And people call, why don't you all shut up? You're bringing in religion where it isn't supposed to be. And, well, sorry, but religion is supposed to be there and we're not going to shut up. And they tell us that, shut up, and sorry, but just because you think religion shouldn't be commenting on public policy, that's your problem. It's not our problem. Okay. So what we always say is, call in, agree with us, disagree with us, but do not be disagreeable. Yeah? And that happens. Folks, to me, this is, I was going to say something about, now I'm going to make a little transition, and you will never see me take the pulpit or sitting in front of you, talking to your church, telling you my political preferences. I have political preferences. I do say them on the radio, but I think it's totally inappropriate for me to say them at church. Because we're here as an obligation, all of us, to worship God. And our job is to teach the gospel, not to get into vote for this or vote for that. But for me, being an American, and July the 4th is an extremely important day for me, because I think most of you know that I'm originally from Havana, Cuba. And my mom and dad arrived here as refugees. I was recently in the house of another young couple that are here as refugees from the Middle East, a Christian couple. And when I walked into their home and I saw into their little apartment, I immediately flashed back. When I walked, I remember my mom, because when we left Cuba, my dad couldn't leave with us. And I remember one table, two chairs, a cheap sofa, and several mattresses on the floor. And I'll never forget, that's all we had. All we had. And I still, to this day, I'm grateful that a place like America, like the United States, exists. That it exists. Now, I'm not saying we always behave according to our creed, because God knows there is enough horrible things that we have done as a people. But that doesn't invalidate the creed. You know, this is the only nation. You can move, for example, say you move to France to live there. You're never going to be a Frenchman. If you move to Italy, you're never going to be Italian. If you move to Venezuela, you're never going to be a Venezuelan. But you can move to the United States from anywhere in the world and become an American. And the reason for that is that it's part of an idea. It's a country that is founded on an idea. And if you agree with that idea, that's what makes this country great. Now, given what we're going through this political season, I was telling somebody the other day that I feel this political season, especially in the presidential race, I feel politically homeless. Well, politically homeless. I have no idea. I have three choices, I think. I don't vote, and, you know, I think I should. Or I vote for Trump, or I vote for Hillary. And I think if I vote for Trump or Hillary, I'm going to have to do so holding my nose. Whoever I decide to vote for. But that's different than our country. Our country is a great gift from God. And even though we have failed many people throughout the years, that is still our vocation. You know, I am a failure when it comes to my vocation as a priest. Now, I know you'll say, oh, Father, don't say that to you. Yeah, when it comes in God's eyes, I am a failure. I am a sinner. But I was never meant to be a success, because he makes sure to get people who are screw-ups to show that his power is at work. And so it's the same thing. I still have the vocation to the priesthood, even though I never live up to it. And we have the vocation of our country, even though we never live up to it. and we have to keep on trying. And that's why it's important that we do not retreat, that we enter and keep our principles, and don't just, as we approach this, I hear a lot of times people saying, well, everybody votes their wallet. Well, I hope you don't. I hope you vote your principles about what's important and about what's important for the soul of this nation. And I hope that those principles are reflections of what you've learned from Jesus. And, you know, we don't walk around trying to convert people, but that doesn't mean that we withdraw when it comes to bringing our ideas and being part of the conversation that is creating the democracy, that is creating the rules by which we live. So, as we get going on this political season, if you need to use both hands, buy a clothespin and just put it right there, and just make the best decision that you can make. And it's not going to be easy, but I think our country deserves that we as Christians do not abandon our principles, and that we participate in making this place literally a place for all people where justice, liberty is found for all. And so I hope we participate, and I hope we do so with a Christian conscience. Thank you.